Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Wednesday, the 2nd of February, 2011. It's Groundhog's Day. If old Punxsutawney Phil popped up his little head out of his burrow in Tucson today, he surely would proclaim, "Winter is back in the old Pueblo," as we're preparing for a couple of nights of very hard freezes tonight and tomorrow. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. The program re-airs in its entirety from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show includes a conversation with Dr. Gordon Avey, the director of the Sarver Heart Center at the University of Arizona. Then we'll talk with Andre Cherney. He's the new state chair of the Democratic Party. Tom Collier, the Buckmaster Show contributor on consumer affairs, will be along. He'll have some very good advice about how not to become a victim of a scam. Plus, a newsmaker interview with Democratic Ward 2 City Councilman Paul Cunningham. The Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but there is always room for listener comments and questions. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508. After all, it's worth the call just to talk with the lovely and talented Rosemary Brandt, who is the Buckmaster Show producer. Well, for several decades now, Dr. Gordon Avey has been on a crusade advocating chest compression only CPR. Dr. Avey is the director of the Sarver Heart Center at the University of Arizona. Currently, the Sarver Heart Center's resuscitation research group published Arizona data in the Journal of the American Medical that's a mouthful, isn't it? American Medical Association, which validates the group's decades of research and advocacy. The research shows that survival rates for patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest are better when bystanders do chest compression only CPR compared with CPR that calls for chest compressions interpreted with or interrupted, I should say, by so-called mouth-to-mouth rescue breaths. Dr. Avey joins us now in studio live on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Avey, good to see you.
Good to see you again.
This has been a crusade with you actually going back to 1993. Was there some incident that kind of triggered this where you said, maybe there's something to this, perhaps, chest compression only CPR?
Well, the main thing that contributed is that out-of-hospital cardiac arrest is a major health concern in the United States. If you're over the age of 40, you one out of eight men will die of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, 300,000 in the United States per year. It is a major health issue. And the facts were that when someone collapsed, only one out of four were getting bystander CPR. And when you ask them why, the major reason was, hey, I don't want to do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. I might get an infection, or I don't know how to do it. It's too complicated, et cetera. So our initial emphasis was, gee, it's better than doing nothing, and most people were doing nothing. And then we discovered that when people were doing the standard guidelines, by the time they stopped pressing on the chest, lift the chin, pitch the nose closed, took a breath, made a seal, blew, watched the chest come up and down, repeated that, went back, find out where to put their hands, it was 16 seconds.
Too long.
Way too long. And so it turns out that with cardiac arrest, the heart is fibrillating, it's not pumping, and so when you press on the chest, each time you press, that's their heartbeat. So your heart, your hands become the heartbeat, and when you stop pressing on the chest, blood flow to the brain stops, and that's not good.
The hands, in effect, are mimicking the action of the heartbeat.
Yeah, the technique is very simple. You put the heel of one hand in the center of the chest, right between the nipples. You put the heel of the other hand right on top of it. You put your shoulders directly over the individual, and you lock your elbows. By that we mean your arms are straight, and then you fall, compressing the chest about 2 inches. And you do that at 100 times per minute. You know, and you can think of a song like the Bee Gees, Staying Alive, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and keep up the beat that way. And then it's important that after each compression, you actually come off the chest, because that little recoil brings blood back to the chest and air in.
So remember, the key there is that 100
compressions per minute. Absolutely.
So a little bit of the chronology. Idea first came about around 1993. 10 years later, you advocated, and your colleagues at the Sarver Heart Center, that the city of Tucson, their emergency personnel, adapt this procedure. Then how has the response been in the intervening time with the American Heart Association and others? Have they joined? Are they on board?
Well, they're partly on board. As you know, the Heart Association guidelines just came out this October, and they advocate what they call hands-only CPR. Not sure they trademarked that or not, but it's called hands-only CPR. And they say if you're unwilling or untrained, you should do hands-only CPR. But then they advocate being trained so you can do chest compression plus ventilation. And of course, we think that that's not quite far enough yet. And particularly over in Europe, they have not changed at all yet. So we still have our work to do, and we're going to pursue it until we get it right.
It's 13 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. We are speaking with Dr. Gordon Avey. He's the director of the Sarver Heart Center at the University of Arizona and a pioneer in the chest compression only CPR. As far as the seeing the technique, you were explaining it here on the radio, but actually I understand on YouTube they've had 4 million hits, and it takes about 6 minutes to watch the little video that is also available on the Sarver Heart Center website.
Yeah, that's correct. This is a 6-minute video that you can look at by going to www.heart.arizona.edu, and it explains the technique, and we've actually had people look at that 6-minute video and use it to save a life. So it's exciting. One of the important things that we point out in that video is that you do not have to remove the person's clothing. In so many of these things that, you know, they show the mannequin with no clothes on, or they show unzipping thing. You know, you think you're going to do that to a stranger on the street?
No, I mean, this is a clothes-on procedure.
This is a clothes-on procedure. Now, obviously, if you're going to use an automatic external defibrillator, you know, you have to put the pads on the bare chest. But for the majority of us, you just have to put them on their back.
Now, in honor of February being Heart Month, the Sarver Center, the Heart Center at the U of A, is sponsoring a half-day Healthy Heart Public Education Conference. That will be on Saturday, February 12th. In the morning, Dr. Avey is going to be there discussing sudden cardiac arrest and chest compression-only CPR. You'll also be demonstrating, I'm sure, how to do this. And if folks want to learn how to do this, they can stick around after the conference and they'll get a quick lesson, correct?
Right. Absolutely right. And that's at 12 o'clock. So even if you can't make the conference, if you want to come to 12 o'clock to learn this. This is going to be a very interesting program. In addition, Lori Maxdollar will be talking about heart disease in women. Leslie Ritter will be talking about strokes, prevention of strokes, and what to do about strokes. Dr. Peter Ott, one of our electrophysiologists, is going to be talking about arrhythmias, symptoms, and treatment. And Dr. Kern will be talking about opening blocked artery. So it should be a very interesting morning.
I want to move on to some news that came out concerning a very prominent cardiac surgeon who is joining your staff, Dr. Robert Poston. Everyone has heard of Dr. Jack Copeland. Dr. Copeland, of course, a pioneer in heart surgery, moved on to cardiac surgery professorship at the University of California, San Diego. But you have a new individual who has come to town, and I understand that Dr. Poston is very much into the minimally invasive heart surgery.
Yes, his expertise is in robotic bypass surgery, and they will institute that in the Department of Surgery soon. We still have all of the other transplant surgeons, all the other expertise, so we're still a world leader in cardiac transplantation, also in artificial heart technology, such as our vice president has. But this will be another area that we will expand into.
Let's talk a little bit about primary care physicians. Fewer and fewer doctors are going into primary care. Is this an economic issue?
I really think it is. You know, when I graduated, more than half of our medical school class went into primary care type internal medicine. Last year at the University of Arizona, we graduated 120 students, and seven went into internal medicine. So that's all your internists, all your cardiologists, all your cancer specialists, all your renologists. I told my wife, don't get sick. There's not going to be anybody to take care of you.
So as far as primary care, we're going to have a big shortage we're facing here in Arizona.
I really think we are.
What's the solution to that? How do we get young doctors interested in primary care?
I don't know the answer, but I think one of the things is finance. I think we need to figure out a way that if somebody wants to go into medicine, that their college and their medical school needs to be financed in some way so that their motivation won't be that once they graduate, they're so far in debt that every decision they make has to be a financial one, which is not good for the health of the economy of the United States.
Let's go back to heart disease, your area certainly of expertise. How do we get people to be a little more conscious of their, make a healthy heart rather than a very diseased heart? What are some simple things that people can do right now?
Yeah, well, the most important determinant of whether you're going to have heart disease or not is your inheritance. So I tell the medical students it's very easy to prevent heart disease. Just pick your parents very carefully. You want someone who...
It's all in the genes.
It's all in the genes. So particularly if you have a family history, grandfather, parents, siblings with cardiovascular disease, then you're at increased risk. There's no question about it. But the standard ordinary risk factor things that we've been advocating for the last 40 years has really made a difference. When I came to Tucson in 1970, not that I made this difference, but the 40% of Americans died of cardiovascular disease and 23% died of cancer. Each decade, it's gone down 2%, so that now 32% of people die of cardiovascular disease, and this is based mainly on treating the risk factors of elevated cholesterol, not smoking, controlling blood pressure, et cetera. So those are the basic thing. Of course, there's stress that contributes to it. There's a little bit of diet. There's a huge problem of obesity. We're probably the last generation that may outlive our parents, because if you look at, obesity is a huge problem. Now, if you look at the soldiers that went into World War II, I mean, they all weighed 145 pounds.
That's true.
Now, if you go out on the beach, or actually just get on the elevator at the UMC.
Walk down any street.
Walk down any street. So yeah, there's a lot you can do. You've got to exercise more. You've got to do a diet. But my emphasis on, you know, if you got the wrong genes, you can exercise and diet all you want, and you're still going to have cardiovascular disease. You've got to control the cholesterol. And it's not just the good stuff. It's, I mean, the bad stuff. It's the LDL, which is the lousy cholesterol, and the HDL, which is the healthy cholesterol. That's all got to be controlled. Your blood pressure has got to be controlled. Not smoke. Keep your weight down. Exercise.
Okay, Dr. Avey, thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show. Another quick reminder that Saturday, February the 12th, for the Healthy Heart Public Education Conference, Dr. Avey will be there along with some of his fine colleagues, and anything you want to know about heart disease, the chest, compression only, CPR, everything's going to be covered out there, and this event will be at the University Medical Center. Thank you so much, Dr. Avey, for being a guest on the Buckmaster Show.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's now about 22 past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. We'll talk a little politics with Andre Cherney, the new state chair of the Democratic Party. That's coming up next.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at ferromoripizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
It's coming up on 25 minutes past the hour. Andre Cherney, former candidate for Arizona Treasurer, former White House aide, assistant Arizona Attorney General, is the new chair to lead the Democratic Party in Arizona toward a critical 2012 election cycle. Andre Cherney is on the Buckmaster Show live line. Andre, congratulations on your election.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Really appreciate it.
Tell me about some of the priorities you have for the Democratic Party as we start to gear up for another election cycle in 2012.
Oh, it feels like we just ended an election cycle.
Doesn't it seem that way?
Yeah, I think we have a little bit of time before 2012 is upon us. Yeah, I think the priorities of the Democratic Party are really the priorities of where Arizona is right now. Obviously, as I'm sure everybody listening knows, 2010 was not a good year for Democrats in Arizona or nationally. And we are, for the first time now in 16 years, without any statewide elected officials, with supermajorities for Republicans in both houses of the legislature. It means the Democrats have to change the way that they do business. And it means that we have to be able to really speak out to the broad mainstream of the state. I think that's what we've seen over the past few weeks happen in Arizona politics. we had to, both parties choose new leadership. And I think with my election, we saw a Democratic Party that is going into the mainstream. I ran very explicitly on saying we need to build a big tent that's going to welcome in independents, welcome in fed-up Republicans, to work together to try to solve some of the problems in the state. And on the other hand, you see a Republican Party under the leadership of Russell Pierce, who's really running the state for all intents and purposes, push a whole series of measures that are they're pushing towards the extreme as opposed to the mainstream. I think that's going to be a big contrast for people in 2012.
Andre Cherney, I think a lot of Democrats, some Republicans for that matter, and independents are very concerned about what they're seeing at the Capitol. With so much emphasis on President Obama and his birth certificate, revising the 14th Amendment, all the gun legislation that's coming out of Phoenix or proposed legislation, they're concerned with this direction. And I thought that the budget was supposed to be the top priority here.
You'd think so. I mean, we have the worst budget deficit of any state in the country. We're facing the worst economic downturn in Arizona history by any measure. And we're in year three or four, perhaps, of that economic downturn. And yet nobody who's listening today to us on the air will be able to point to a single thing that state government has done of any substance over the past 3 years to get our economy back on track, to help create jobs in the private sector, to help businesses grow and thrive. Instead, as you said, 41 legislators are able to agree that we need to demand President Obama's birth certificate or to rewrite the 14th Amendment, basically refight the Civil War. At a time that we should be moving into the 21st century, the sense down there is that the motto is bring back the worst ideas of the 1850s. We need to start getting down to business in this state. And that's not about Democrats or Republicans, as you said. That's about what Arizona needs right now. And it needs a sense of leadership that's going to be actually able to tackle some of the big issues and call people out when they're playing side politics and wedge politics.
So I think regardless of what political party you are affiliated with, you've got to be concerned about a state that's looking at a $1.4 billion budget. That's a big sea of red ink that we need to tackle over the next 12 to 18 months.
Oh, absolutely. And it's going to require some very tough decisions. And unfortunately, so many of those decisions have been kicked down the road over and over again over the past few years with gimmicks, with a tax increase that papered over some of the challenges. We need to really think about how we can restart our economic engine in Arizona, which is really going to be the only way that we can finally get our not only economy moving again, but our budget out of this sea of red ink.
Andre Cherney, I also wanted to mention, we're out of time, but you and Phoenix area businessman Jim Peterson recently launched the Business and Entrepreneurship Council, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about that, making Arizona more competitive. Andre Cherney, thank you very much for being with us, and good luck to you.
Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much. We're coming up on 30 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster, always on KJLL or BuckmasterShow.com. We'll be back.
Your attention, please.
This is Tucson's Jolt.
Are you listening?
I'm going to interrupt your thought pattern.
AM 1330, KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Molotov cocktails are being launched in Cairo and fires are being set. CNN's Ivan Watson says pro and anti-government demonstrators are fighting.
Stones are being hurled, continue to be hurled back and forth. And now it seems that the regime supporters are being pushed back hundreds of yards out of Tahrir Square.
Witnesses say several people have been hurt during the fighting. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs says the U.S. is deeply concerned about the violence in Egypt. Kids in Chicago are getting their first snow day in 12 years.
Biggest blizzard in Chicago history.
Thousands of flights are canceled because of the massive storm that has now pushed into the Northeast. Northeast Australia is getting hammered by a tropical cyclone that made landfall today. The job market is looking a bit better. Payroll processor ADP says private employers added 187,000 jobs in January. the most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy. Photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Ford Service presents Mike Rowe talking about getting things done.
On your car.
On your car.
Yeah, right. Look, you take it to the hardworking Ford-trained service professionals at your dealership.
Get the works. An oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection. Now just $29.95 or less after $10 rebate.
Done?
Not yet. Ford Service. Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See participating dealership or visit FordOwner.com for rebate details through 3/31/11.
Done?
Done.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
It's 35 minutes past the hour. The Buckmaster Show live line number 529-3508. Perhaps you have a question for our consumer affairs contributor. Now would be the time to get on the Buckmaster Show live line. Once a month, we do turn to Tom Collier. He is Buckmaster Show contributor on consumer affairs. And Tom, the hard times economically are great times for scammers, especially if you are looking for employment. How do you avoid getting ripped off in the job hunt?
It's difficult for a lot of people, because if you are looking for a job, there's a lot of desperation out there. Desperation tends to blunt your sense of disbelief when you're looking for a job. So a lot of people are going online now, and there are a lot of online scams that are particularly vicious. It's unfortunate in a situation like this that this brings out the worst in people, when essentially the economy and a lot of people, what is employment, 9% unemployment now?
Yeah, something like that, 9%. Almost 10.
As people look for jobs, they can be victimized. The biggest one that we have seen and that we heard of and that continues to be a problem is online applications. If you go to some of the job aggregation sites, I'm not going to mention any names, but everybody knows who I'm talking about, Craigslist. You need to be really careful. They've done a good job of putting up a lot of warnings, but the real issue is if you are asked to apply for a job online, a lot of legitimate companies are doing that. Some of the job aggregation websites, job hunting aggregation websites, allow you to apply online, but you want to be really careful and look at the questions that you're asked to fill out online before you hit that enter key or the send button or click on the send button to mail them. One of the things that you should always look out for is a request for your Social Security number.
I was going to ask you, if they ask for the Social Security number, be very, very cautious.
You don't need to give that online. If you get an interview, and most of these are screening processes anyway to decide who they want to interview. If you get an interview, you can fill out your application, complete your application by giving them your Social Security number then. There are other things that are dead giveaways. One, for example, a recent one said the vendor, the supposed job offerer, the company said, here's what we want you to do. We want you to give us your bank account information because we pay by direct deposit. So if we decide to hire you, it'll make it a lot more convenient for us to give you your paycheck. So give us your bank account number and how we can get into
kind
it.
Kind of, well, putting the cart before the horse.
Obviously,
give us
that type of thing.
Bank information. You're not even hired.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Another thing, well, one of these online websites, after you put all this information in, what you wound up doing when you hit the enter key or the send, clicked on the send button, was you sent all that information to an identity theft ring in Brazil. Mm. You have no idea where it's going, so you really want to be careful in those types of situations. Another thing that you want to watch out for is jobs and job offers where you are required to come up with a little bit of cash. Most recent one that came to light was one where they said, we need you to bring in a copy of your credit report, or we need you to pay $25, $35, $75 so that we can get a copy of your credit report. Well, because you're going to be handling money. Well, first of all, any company that is looking to get a copy of your credit report for employment purposes, you have to give them separate permission to get a copy of the credit report. Secondly, any company that is going to check your credit report has to be or usually is a subscriber to one of the three credit reporting agencies and has that information based on the subscription price that they pay to be a subscriber. You don't need to give them any money. And if they ask for money, that's an obvious sign that it's a scam.
I was going to ask you about – oh, go ahead, Tom.
In this – let me just wrap up this one final instance. They said, well, bring a copy of your credit report, and you have to get it. Well, it's $8 or something like that, $8, $12 to get a copy of your credit report. But, you know, if you have photo manipulation software in a spreadsheet and you're pretty good at it, you can cobble up a fine forgery of a credit report. So if any employer is going to be stupid enough to say, bring a copy of your credit report and show it to us, is that a kind of an employer that you want to work for anyway?
Yeah, so filling out an application – for a job online is very, very common then these days.
It's common. It's becoming more common, but you need to use a little bit of caution before you decide what you're going to be clicking on and sending off.
It just seems very impersonal to me, filling it out online, and I wonder about follow-up about...
Well, if you look at it for what it is, it's essentially a screening mechanism. Nobody's going to hire you right off the bat because you did a wonderful job of filling out an online form. What they're doing is screening you to make sure that they see if they want to talk to you face-to-face. That's when you know they're getting serious.
40 minutes now past the hour. We're talking with Tom Collier. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on consumer affairs. These scareware vendors are paying $8.2 million for a settlement to the Federal Trade Commission. What's that about?
Well, I think that's amazing, first of all, that they could come up with $8.2 million to pay in fines and settlement fees to the Federal Trade Commission. But this is what scareware is. Scareware is software which is offered on those late-night commercials on the obscure cable channels, which say, oh, my gosh, you might have a virus in your computer. You need to call us. You need to log into us and check and see, and we'll tell you whether you have a virus or not. Come on. If you log in to that website that just advertised that you might have a virus, what are they going to tell you? They're going to tell you that they have a virus, and in some of the most egregious situations, what they'll do is actually put malware on your computer that you can't get off your computer until you pay them the $39.95 that they're asking for. And I think those are the ones that the Federal Trade Commission went after and fined to settle the charges that the Federal Trade Commission was leveling against them. But what I find appalling is that $8 million and change is something that these companies can pay just as a cost of doing business.
Yeah, they've got that money. So what's $8 million, right?
Yeah.
And where's that money coming from?
And the people
it's
who
a
fall,
lot of $39.95.
The people who fall for these types of things fall for them over and over and over again. We need a little more unbelievability out there, a little more incredulousness.
Watch out for charity scams. That a lot of people want to help, of course, after the January 8th shootings here in Tucson. What are some signs to look for an honest and reputable charity and one that may not be so?
Well, you know, there are people who have no heart and no soul, and situations like this bring them out, unfortunately. If you're talking about a trivial amount, like a couple of dollars for one of the memorial bracelets that are made out of the soft plastic, then that's okay. Although I don't want to give as much as a penny to anybody who isn't legitimately trying to raise money for a legitimate cause. If you're talking a substantial amount of money, then you need to make sure that the charity is approved by the Internal Revenue Service with what's known as a 501c3 designation. You can check the Better Business Bureau. You can check the GuideStar. You can check online to find out if the company does have that designation, because that makes your substantial contribution deductible for you. And it also is means that they've been vetted in some way to make sure that the money goes to the cause for which it's raised rather than goes into the pockets of the people who are raising it. So in these situations where people feel like they want to do something and you have a company or a radio station or an organization that tries to aggregate all these contributions, once again, if you're going to give trivial amounts, out-of-pocket amounts, then I would say go ahead. But at the same time, if you're talking about a substantial contribution of $200, $300, then you want to make sure that they have the designation from the Internal Revenue Service called 501c3, that they are indeed a legitimate charity and that they send the money to the cause for which it was raised.
You know, charities, you do need to try to keep the overhead down. I would think if you're giving to a charity, you want to give as much, make sure as much of the money that you give actually goes to what you intend and not to high salaries for those that are managing the fund.
There are a lot of charities where that is indeed the case. The managers get high salaries, and sometimes as much as 10 or 15% of the dollar that you give actually goes to the cause for which it's raised. So the GuideStar, the Better Business Bureau, Wise Giving Alliance section of the Better Business Bureau, they have information on how the money is actually divvied up in terms of fundraising expenses, administrative expenses, and actual what they call program costs or operational costs, which is the percentage of the dollar that you give that actually goes to the cause for which it's raised.
Have you paid off those Christmas bills yet, Mr. Collier?
Well, of course. Haven't you?
This, of course, is the time when we're getting those credit card statements. Pay down that credit card. We talked briefly about that in our January visit. Really, really important, isn't it, to get the credit card?
Well, it is, and you need to have a plan, and you need to stick to it and make sure that you actually make the payments that you promised yourself that you're going to make. It's like any New Year's resolution.
How many people actually do it, though? It's very, very hard, isn't it?
It's difficult to tell, and I still am struck by the gentleman who I saw on one of the television news programs who was unemployed, had a $1,500 limit on his credit card, had over the course of the year paid it down to a zero balance, but decided that he was going to treat himself to a bunch of electronic equipment and ran the total right back up on his credit card. Because he decided, I've suffered enough, I'm going to treat myself. That's poisonous thinking. That's the kind of stuff that gets you in trouble and keeps you in trouble financially.
Got less than a minute. The credit card companies have had to make more disclosures. There was some legislation that says they have to disclose how
much.
Yes.
You have a lot of protections. I won't go, since we have a limited amount
a few
of time.
Seconds, yeah.
One of the things that I'll say, though, is that the credit card companies have changed their pitch, and what they're doing now is sending a lot of these solicitations for credit cards that are designated for business use. And what used to be a long, involved, complicated application is now reduced to a check mark in the upper right corner of the application, which says you're pre-approved. And if you check that and say, yeah, I'm using it for business, then none of the protections which were passed and which began in July of last year apply. Business credit card use is not the same thing as consumer credit card use. So you got to be careful and watch out. And if you don't use it for personal use, our business use, who was the one who made the inappropriate remarks there?
Okay, Tom Collier, thank you very much for sharing some of your thoughts on consumer affairs on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. That's next on the Buckmaster Show.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tancredi, at the southwest corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
And we are coming up now on 49 minutes past the hour, and joining us now is Ward 2 City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Mr. Cunningham, good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the Walmart situation. The El Encanto neighborhood is requesting that Tucson Mayor Bob Walkup and you and your colleagues on the council comply with Arizona law and hold a full hearing on the Walmart development at Elkhorn. This was a news release that was sent out, as you know, yesterday by the El Encanto neighborhood group. What's the status of the Elkhorn over there, the proposed status?
Well, from what I understand, a lot of the decisions were made before I got on the council, but the idea was that they're going to build a Walmart in the original footprint of where the, I think, Robinson's May store or Macy's store was. And so the building will not occupy any more space. The plat was approved, I think, 5 years ago. And at this point, what's going to happen is a Walmart's going to go there. And the big controversy part, well, part of the big controversy is the 24-hour operations of a Walmart. And a big part of it is that the, you know, it's a real tough trade-off. Do you take this mall that was once supposed to be a high-end mall that has some that has some economic drivers in it and has some advantages economically, and do you put a discount store there? And a lot of people do shop at Walmart. So those are some of the issues plaguing us. The other thing is that they've got this 24-hour issue. And, you know, I live by a 24-hour Walmart. It is not a cakewalk. There are some issues that people have pointed to with some of the things that go on in 24-hour activity in Walmarts and some of the issues that come in Walmart parking lots, things of that nature. I think the city and Walmart have tried to work together to do some of the things so that some of the neighborhood's concerns are addressed. However, it's really, to me, kind of, it's not something that I'm very excited about, is that Walmart competes with our local businesses, and they compete with our locally owned businesses. Target has a regional operations center in Tucson, so they have a little bit more stake in the Tucson community, as I don't believe Walmart does. So I have some concerns about it, but I mean there's not a lot we can do.
Will there be this news release from the El Encanto, a state's homeowners association, says they're pleased that state law is going to require Tucson to solicit comment and hold hearings on the Elcon's proposal. So is this still a very much percolating, this issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to have a public hearing. I really look forward to it. I think that's a great opportunity for the neighborhoods to address their concerns in public. I absolutely would be 100% behind having the public hearing and being able to ask Walmart to change some of their issues, especially with the 24-hour operations. I just wish that, you know, I was hoping that at some point we'd revitalize Elkhorn the way Park Place was. We'd have an opportunity to put an ice rink there or other things, and instead we're getting Walmart. And so I think there's other things that could be used in that mall.
You know, this is a question no one has really been able to answer it for me. Does Walmart ever make exceptions to the 24-hour operation rule? I mean, do they have some operations that hold so-called normal business hours?
From what I understand, Bill, it's not unprecedented. There are Walmarts that close during the night in different areas, some due to safety concerns, some due to neighborhood concerns. They have a lot of stores around the country. I'm sure that not every single store operates in a uniform fashion.
Let's talk about the city dropping the proposal to repaint the A black and white on A Mountain. City Council yesterday decided that would not be the direction to move in. This was something that Democrat Rahina Romero and Republican Steve Kasachek had proposed, the idea to paint the A the same patterns as the white and black ribbons that were being distributed and are distributed by homicide survivors.
I think everybody's heart's in the right place, and this thing is just mired with good intentions. But again, when you talk about painting the A, you get into a sensitive subject. A lot of people believe it represents the University of Arizona. Some people believe it represents the troops. Some people believe it represents things. I mean, if we were in the habit of painting the A every year for different symbol things, and it was painted 4, 5, 6 times a year, I don't think that would be as big of an issue as this now. And that's kind of the issue that we're running into. It needs to be a situation where if we're going to paint the A every year on green on St. Patrick's Day and red and white during Christmas and have it things and then be able to paint it for things like this, I think those are things as long as it didn't cost any money and people did it, there was a foundation that kind of did it for free with private money, I could see something like that. But if we're going to paint it one color and leave it one color and that's going to be what we're going to do, then let's stick with that. And so I think a lot of people came in and chimed in right away. The response from the community was overwhelming. And they said, look, some people said, oh, that's such a great gesture. And some people said, you know, we're already painting this to honor the troops, or, you know, the red, white, and blue represents the U of A. And, you know,
yeah,
where
I think
are we
it's
going
pretty
here?
Difficult to get any kind of a majority consensus on whether or not what color really the A Mountain should be painted. You know, we had the mayor. Mayor Walkup was on our Friday roundtable here on the Buckmaster Show last Friday. We were talking about tributes to the and remembering the January 8th tragedy. Any thoughts on how you think the city should proceed as far as a permanent memorial?
You know, I've been a Tucsonan my whole life, and I've never, I mean.
You're a native, right?
Yeah. Well, I was actually born in Phoenix. We moved here when I was 2, but my parents were born, were both moved here at a young
okay.
age. So we're longtime Tucsonans, and, you know,
And your dad is a good friend, George Cunningham, of course.
Thank you. And I was felt with sorrow and awe and all those feelings of despair when this tragedy happened. But I've never been more proud of being a Tucsonan than this last month, as our community has just united and overwhelmingly come together and said, "Hey, we're Tucsonans no matter what. Tucson thrives together." And as long as we keep that in our minds, that together Tucson thrives, I think we're going to be just fine. And I think we're going to come out of this stronger than ever. I think Tucson in this next decade is going to have a renaissance. And I think that everybody should buckle their seatbelts and get ready for the ride.
I think that is the good thing. If you can ever point to a good thing coming out of a tragedy, this community, this may be a rebirth item for this community.
Well, it really is, in my opinion. I think it's the opportunity to put things aside and to have dialogues that we wouldn't be having otherwise. I think it's the opportunity to recognize our partners in and out of the city limits. I think it's the opportunity for different communities that normally wouldn't associate with each other to come together and work on projects together. I think there's all kinds of things that come out of this. And more importantly, we have to take a look at we have to help the victims heal, and we have to mourn the lost, but at the same time, we have to stand behind them and not just behind them, but stand beside them and just show them that their support, and nothing's going to happen to them. We've got their back no matter what. And as long as they know that, as long as everybody believes that together that Tucson thrives, that I think we can do some amazing things in the next few years.
How are we doing in business? We've got the Gem Show that opened up. What are you hearing? Does it look like this could be a good Gem Show, or what are you hearing on the street?
You know, economic indicators are fickle. You watch that. You watch when those unemployment rates come out. You watch how those home sales are going. You watch how the sales tax revenues come in, and you're looking for that uptick. And one day you think, oh, my gosh, everything's great. And then the next day you're, oh, no. And you just kind of have to wade through it and be patient and kind of just be calm about how this recovery kind of ends up. I think there are a lot of different small businesses working together to keep Tucson strong, to keep people's doors open. And I think Tucson has responded. I think the city has changed some of the practices that were there before I was on the council to try to be more business friendly. I think we're trying to find different ways to allow people who have a good idea to be able to put that idea forward and try to make some money. And we're also working to try to bring some of those businesses in so we can have some jobs here that create revenue.
Boy, I hear you. Now that I am a small businessman, believe me, I hear you. Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, want to give you a plug for your winter paper shredding event. So if you've got some documents that you want shredded, this would be a great opportunity. That's this Saturday. And speaking of Walmart, this is in the Walmart parking lot on the southeast corner of Kolb and Speedway, 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Is there a fee for this?
No. We're asking that if you want to donate to the food bank, that you do. If you bring in, I think, a second box, I think you get charged for it. But again, on the east side and in Ward 2, we've got a lot of folks who are in their senior years, and one of the things that they fall victim to is identity theft. So we want to encourage people to shred their documents and ensure that their personal information is safe.
Councilman Cunningham, thank you very much for being with us. And the city is facing certainly some large challenges. We're about out of time, but the budget's looking a little more doable right now.
It's funny. When I walked in, I'd been on the phone with a couple people from staff and talking about the budget, some of the discussions that we had last night in the meeting. We can get home. We can balance and not have a structural. I think we can get there. And now it's a real question of, okay, so what do we do when we get there? And it'll be a matter of prioritizing and figuring out, are we going to set a number on how many police officers we're going to restore? Are we going to set a number on how many pools we're going to open? And are we going to set a number on how much of the furlough money from some of the employees are we going to get back for them? Those are the things we're going to look at.
Okay, Councilman Cunningham, thanks for being with us on the Buckmaster Show. We'll look forward to our next visit with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, Paul Cunningham, a guest on the Buckmaster Show. We are out of time. We're going to have to run. We'll be here tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. on KJLL The Jolt and BuckmasterShow.com. Have a great day.
KJLL, South Tucson.